What's up, y'all? This is Byron Kennedy, and this is my podcast, Hot Chicken and Cage-Free Conversation. I worked in the radio business for a while, and then I moved over to the record business for a while, and then I just got done with corporate America. So I did what anybody else would do when they're uninspired and tired of the bullshit. I decided to become a stand-up comedian. And when you're a stand-up comedian, apparently you have to have a podcast because that's what the world needs is another podcast. So here's mine. What's up, y'all, man? This is Byron Kennedy, and thank you for joining me on my podcast, Hot Chicken and Cage-Free Conversation, where we're mostly in Nashville, Tennessee, just hanging out, having some hot chicken, and I talk to people that I find interesting or people that I consider my friends and people that I think you'll hopefully find interesting as well here in Nashville, Tennessee. And today, we're sitting down with one of my favorite bands, Parmalee. Got yeah, Matt and Barry from Parmalee over here.
What's up, man?
Josh and Scott couldn't be here. I guess Scott's fishing. I'm guessing Scott's fishing, isn't he? Keep it real.
He's newlywed, man.
He never stops fishing.
No, I'm fishing. He's hunting.
He's hunting.
He's hunting. I'm fishing.
Oh, usually. Okay. Well, thank you for not fishing right now. He's out hunting right now, ain't he?
Know where we're going to go hunting for the next 5 days, and so he's got a honey bun while he's got the chance, I guess, you know.
He definitely is a newlywed.
Honey bun is what you call hanging out with your girlfriend.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Or so is he one of those who gets, well, it's his first marriage, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know.
Is he going to quit the band soon?
I don't think so. She's in the entertainment industry as well, so she gets it. But, you know, when you're gone a week and then she's got to go leave for a week.
Yeah, it's
got to
be hard.
Yeah, you got to find your time. I wouldn't know anything about that. I just stay gone all the time.
But. Yeah. So he's your brother, right?
Yeah,
you guys
Scott's
are brothers.
My brother, drummer.
So did you two started the band or let's
pretty much. We
jump right in there.
We played in a band with my dad growing up. But Scott and I had a band in high school, went on to play with my dad and his band. Barry's our first cousin. He eventually joined my dad's band. And so when my dad disbanded and said, hey, I'm done with this. You guys do your thing. We decided to, start writing our own music. And that's when we found Josh because he could play piano and keys. And so we got him to jump in with us and started what was called Slip Joint then. Not to be confused with Slipknot, which we did get confused for Slipknot one time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Did you? Yeah.
It was like a Marine. We were like some Marine.
It was near
base
a military base,
and
we were playing under this tent, and these dudes just flooded in. And they thought it was Slipknot.
They showed up to see Slipknot.
We're in there in our shiny shirts singing like we did.
Were they pissed?
Yeah, they were pissed. Yeah.
Yeah, Slipknot is not the same.
No, it's us.
Not the same crowd at all. But, oh, wow.
So then we decided to, like I said, start writing our own music and change the name and start making $0, you know, for the next 10 years.
Yeah, I understand. I'm living that right now.
You know what I'm talking about. Yeah, all the comedians out there know what I'm talking about.
And you're from Parmalee. That's where that name came from.
Pretty much, yeah. Like right up the street. But the town is where we rented a little barn about half the size of this room and rehearsed and named it after the town.
Yeah, I love that. Now, when I say you're one of my favorite bands, that's not just me pandering or me because you're sitting in front of me. You're sitting in front of me because you're one of my favorite bands.
Oh, thank you.
As just normal, cool fucking guys, but just honestly, you have been, in my opinion, one of the, if not the hardest working band I've ever been associated with. And I met you guys back, obviously, when I was in radio in Sacramento, KNCI. You guys came through, I believe it was your radio tour, and I had just gotten to country. And you guys came through, and I mean, we do a lot of events. Radio does a lot of events, man, and you guys were always there for that radio station, man. And that's a lot of travel out to California and a lot of free shows and a lot of, you know, a lot of work. So, A, thank you, but B, seriously, you guys are some hard-working dudes, man.
Well, thank you, man.
And you're badass.
Well, appreciate that. We just did one of those shows last night and
Jacksonville, Florida.
We're going to do one Friday in Columbus.
Or the radio shows?
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I mean, you know how it works. Yeah. We've got to do it, man.
You know, we come from a place where if there was an opportunity, we took it.
Yeah.
We took all of them because you never know which one's going to pay off. And we just got used to not saying no.
Man, you know, I feel like if you guys were like a like the 80s bands I used to listen to, man, you'd be one of the biggest damn ones. Like, I don't understand how you're not like on Nickelback level right now, man. I mean, it's, for real, why? No, I know that Nickelback has a thing, but like, but like,
look at his graph.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind being on Nickelback level. Hey, I know right, that, man. I mean, it, like, man. I just think as a band, you guys are fucking bad to the bone.
Well, thank
man.
You, man.
I love listening to you guys, man.
We're still chipping away, man. You know, we just recently.
Yeah, how's this last year felt, man?
It's been awesome, dude. I mean, especially over quarantine, where we you know, we had a song start to take off and. It could have been the other way. You know how the shit goes.
It's yeah.
It's always up and down, you know, and to have something positive happening over that time when you're sitting at the house.
Well, you know what happened. You know, like, the reality of what happened there with that song is, you know, that was the last record I impacted.
Yeah.
And then I got the fuck out of the way. So, you know, a lot of the success is because I wasn't there to fuck it up.
Well, hold on before we go any further. I actually got something. We brought something in here for you. That we wanted to present you, since you were the very first record that you.
Oh, shit.
Or the very last one.
The last record that I impacted in my record,
man,
promotion days.
There you go.
Oh, shit. Kennedy, get the hell out of here.
Singer just away, so there you go.
Sweet, man. Nice, yeah, man. Can you guys sign this for me?
Absolutely.
Awesome, man. You know, I thought they forgot about me.
Nah, man.
And they spelt my name right and everything.
Oh, that's good. That's good. You're hard to forget.
I
you
actually
know?
Have had when I was in radio, I got a couple of these where they spelled my name wrong.
Oh yeah,
yeah. But here's the thing, man. Here's the difference between radio and records that a lot of radio people don't understand, and I had to learn the hard way, man. So if there's any radio people listening, please listen up. You know, I feel like, and this is not an insult to radio. I did radio for 20 years, you know, and mm-hmm. I programmed for CBS for a long time, and you get these, and they're cool. But then when you move over to records. You don't get these, you earn these.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like the ones I got in radio were somewhat like participation trophies. You know what I mean? And then when you're on the record side, man, you earn that shit because, and no fault to radio because I didn't know either. When I was in radio, I had no fucking idea. Like, I felt like you guys would come do my show. Didn't really dawn on me that there's another 160 radio stations on the panel also want you to do their show. I'm only worried about my show. And you don't really think about it that much because you're just trying to get work done. You're trying to have a successful event, and you're kind of, you know, in your little world, right? And then the reps would get really frustrated, and they would take it personal. And I would always be, you know, if you dropped a record or you didn't add a record, and I would always wonder, why do these reps take this shit so personal, man? It's not personal. It's just I only got so many slots on my playlist. I can only do so much, whatever. And then you get over here, you get over to the record side, and you realize – man, this shit is personal because you're on the road with these guys. You get to know these guys on a whole different level. You see how hard they work, how much they put into it. And yeah, it's personal. You're damn right it's personal, man. And it's, you know, so. And I said at the party the other night, I know no one heard me because no one was listening to damn thing that I had to say all night. I was a lot of fun hosting that event.
That was a tough crowd the other night.
Tough crowd, right?
Any crowd, industry crowd in Nashville is the toughest crowd on earth, right?
Yeah, well, and I actually did comedy in front of them, so I know. But that I told them, like, man, guys. Call your reps back. Like, you know what I mean? I tried to have a heart-to-heart with radio. They know it gave me shit. But, you know, it is damn personal. And, yeah, this is awesome. I'd love for you guys to sign that on the way out.
Absolutely.
Hell yeah. Yep.
But anyway, they didn't want to hear from me anyways. You know what I mean? But I told them, I said, you know, I didn't know till I got to records how many people are pulling at you guys constantly, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like country artists do a better job than in any other format at trying to make everybody happy. It's impossible to make everybody happy, but I feel like country artists genuinely do try.
Well, we get caught up in it, you know, like especially when there's two stations at a show and like they want to somebody wants to present or like, you know, there's what they call a neutral station. And then somebody wants to bring you on and you're friends with that person that's at that station. You have really a personal repertoire of them, and then the other station wants to do it. Like, what do? You get thrown in it, but sometimes we just have to say, all right, this is – call our rep at the label, and y'all handle this.
Yeah, y'all handle it. Yeah.
I'm staying out of it. I'm staying out of it. So, but this last year, seriously, like this – so you had a lot of hits and a lot of success early on, right? And then, you know, you only had one small little lull there when I was running the label. You know, that's the only time that, you know, things dipped a little bit. But look, let's be honest, man. That happens to so many artists and bands. I don't care what's... I mean, look, it happened to the Zac Brown Band, for God's sakes. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were monsters. And then for years... recently couldn't find a hit or get any traction at radio, and it's actually harder, you know, when radio, sometimes radio, they just move on, they want the new shiny penny. Yeah. You know what I mean? And then and it's actually sometimes harder to come back when radio's moved on to the new stuff. And we saw Zac Brown struggle to get a hit for a while. It happens to the best of them, and here you guys came, not only came back, but came roaring back. Yeah, tell me about this last year and how exciting that's been, dude, and what has changed for you.
It's interesting that you say that, because Little Big Town is kind of similar.
Yeah.
They had hits, and then they, you know, you didn't hear from them a lot, and we actually played a show with them, and I was interested. I was like, I asked Karen, I was like, you know, what happened? You know, what happened to this low? How did y'all come back? And she was like, we got a new manager. And I was like, okay. So I went to the guys. I said, we're getting a new manager.
Is that how that happened?
That's exactly pretty much, how it happened. Yeah.
And there he sits right there.
There he is.
Yeah.
Shout out to David Fanning for really, you know, being a catalyst behind all this. And
so does your former manager know this story, or is he finding out about it right now?
He's probably finding out about it right now. But
we got rid of one and then kind of was co-managing with one. And it was just a long, you know.
I think everything happened just like it was supposed to happen. I mean, our old manager's not even in Nashville anymore. He's home with his kids now. You know, it was going to eventually happen anyway.
Well, I don't know if that's true, because I heard that he's now managing Little Big Town.
I hope he is.
I think he might have Jedi mind tricked you into that one, man.
But no, man, the year was fun. I mean, we got to take a break. Not fun. We couldn't play any shows, but, you know, we got to take a break from each other. We've been playing our whole lives together. So, and it was always been focused on, we got a show for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, whatever, every week.
Yeah,
and
you guys stayed busy.
Break up and dip out for the most part. And I was writing songs, and, you know, Barry was about to have a baby in North Carolina.
My wife got pregnant, so we spent most of that time in North Carolina at our home. And,
but I don't know. We did stay at work, though. We worked. We put out the piano sessions as soon as we got on quarantine, and then we did, like, shooting videos in the backyard. We were doing writing songs,
TikTok,
and everything. So.
Yeah, I feel like I came out to a party you had out there, as a matter of fact. Y'all were out there doing something, writing and grinding. But you kept grinding. You kept a good attitude, man. That's what I love. It would be real easy to not feel good about, you know.
Well, it's kind of tough because, you know, most people – except that a handful of people write you off and they're like, oh, the guys are done. What are they doing? You know, where have you been? Like, hey, we've been working. You know, we didn't stop working.
We've been just putting out shitty songs.
just because we didn't have, you know, hit songs, you know, for a couple of years on the radio, didn't mean we stopped. We always had our eye on the ball, so we knew we could. We knew it was right there. You just gotta stay at it, and you'll eventually find it. And not get too disgruntled of, you know, fuck that, man. I don't like what's happening now. All this new stuff sucks, blah, blah. You can't have that attitude, man. You got to lean into that and lean into what's happening and understand why it's that and try to, you know, get inspired from it and not just settle in and say, all right, whatever, this, I'm sticking with this and fuck everything else, you know?
Yeah, well, man, it paid off. I love you just the way God made you.
Yeah, man.
With Blanco Brown was a monster. And I knew that was one of those that I can honestly say, like, I don't have the best ears, so I know when I'm flipping out about something on the first listen. Because it usually takes me several, you know, I'm a radio guy. I can't hear a hit. You know what I mean? So
I got to
take jabs at radio, man. I'm in the club. I'm allowed. I did it for 20 years, you know, like radio people don't like me now because I sold out.
I was trying to listen to you the other night.
I went to the regular side. But that when John Loba played me that, I was flipping out. I was like, dude, this is a monster. This is a monster. He's like, I know. But so how did this song come about? The whole Blanco Brown collab, where did it even come from?
I saw Blanco talking to Zach Katz and John Loba at the award show, And at that time, you know, that we could hardly get in the door. They didn't want us. You know what I mean? Let's be honest. We couldn't, you know, we couldn't,
because
we couldn't
get
them.
Because they cut your key cards off. That's why.
Yeah. I mean, it's like that. And so we were like, well, who's this guy, this new guy, talking to Logan Zach Katz? Barry's like, we need to know him. I was like, well, let's go introduce ourselves. So we walked up to Blanco while he was talking with Zach and Loba, and, you know, I'm sure. And we just walked up and said, hey, what's up, man? Who are you? Blanco, Matt, Barry, here's my number, dude. If you come to Nashville, let's write together. And so about 6 months later, Blanco hits me up and says, yo, I'm coming in. I said, cool, man. So he came out to the house. I didn't know him. We didn't know what he did or anything.
Really? That's how that came about?
Yes, didn't know anything about him. He shows up. He's got a classic car. We start talking about cars. I got my Jeep. We go for a Jeep ride. We start shooting BB guns out there. And we realized we started singing the same kind of music. And we just hit it off and became friends. And then he plays, like, well, what do you do? And he plays this the first songs off his first album. He said, I called his Trailer Trap. And I remember sitting in my living room, boombox, jamming, and he's animating out all the stuff, Country Time and all these songs. I was like, I don't know what this shit is, but I like it. People are going to dig it.
Yeah.
Good for you for having that open mind, man.
Dude, that's the only reason we knew him.
I was confused by the Trailer Trap thing. I told Lobo, I said, you're out of your fucking mind. What are you doing? Like, and I admitted that on stage the other night. No one heard it again, but... And then I told Lobo, I said, I hope I didn't offend Blanco, because I like to keep it real. I was like, hey, I'm going to be honest with y'all. When John signed this dude, I thought he was out of his mind, because he was all telling me about this Trailer Trap thing. The dude does rap and country. Anyway, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get on a tangent. But anyway, but you saw it. I didn't.
Yeah, I saw it. I mean, I knew it. I could hear it. And when he sang, I mean, he reminded me of, I mean, he's just a great, amazing singer. It's like the stuff that I love. And I was like, so we wrote some songs and messed around. And, you know,
and nothing came
nothing really happened. And then about 6 months later, he's like, yo, man, check this out. And the Get Up came out. And so then that whole thing happened, and he blew up. And we, you know, we were probably his friends out here.
So this was before the Get Up?
But way before the Get Up, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Okay.
So, no, we knew him. We had worked together before that and became friends. And then the Get Up happened, and it just blew up. And so we had Just the Way I'd written it back in 2018 or whatever it was. And it had like two or three versions. It was one pop version, rock version, and then stripped down version. And we just kept playing it on the bus. And
we kept listening to it. It was like, there's something here, but it ain't right.
David was out, and he said, nah, it just ain't right. Something just ain't right. I'm like, I know, but the song's good.
What is that? You feel like it's missing a piece? You just know instinctively?
Everything. Like,
the very first time that when you wrote it, it came back and it sounded like a, you know, straight up pop record. You know what I mean?
I wrote it with two pop guys, you know.
And we're like, we can't put this out as Parmalee. We're, you know, it's got to sound country, you know. So then y'all went in and did another demo, like it tried to make it more country, and that one wasn't quite right. And then we added some more parts
We finally went in and I did a demo session here in Nashville, and we got all the players on it and did it. And then Fanning, he's like, he said, why don't you get Blanco on it? And I was like, all right. That sounds cool, like a cool idea, you know. And I texted to him. And he's like, yeah. So we went down, and Fanning put together the track that you hear now. Like, he, you know, mixed up the organic sound with the new stuff in it. And Blanco sang on it in Atlanta. And
did he write his parts or were they?
No, that was, we had already had the song already written.
So the whole thing was.
Yeah, it was done. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He added his little ad libs and stuff. So that was really cool.
Oh, I was just wondering if that was the missing part you felt like.
No, the missing part was mostly the production of it.
Oh.
It was mostly like adding the new trap beats at the beginning and like everything that makes it, you know.
I felt like it kind of had a Sam Hunt vibe a little bit.
Yeah, all that was kind of missing in the organic part. And so it was all that stuff that came together, and our voices singing together. It's crazy.
It's just interesting to hear that. I think it was just interesting for people to hear that voice on a Parmalee record, and they're like, wow, this is exciting. You know what
Hell
I mean?
Hell yeah.
And the song's great too, you know?
So that night we went down, Dave and I drove down to Atlanta to get Blanco on it. And, you know, I didn't have to do shit. I was having some beers during the session and everything after a few times. And I remember we're driving back from Atlanta. What's that, like 4 hours or something, maybe? And I'm just trying to sleep in the truck, and he's over and over. He plays the song over and over and over. I bet 30 times between the time we left the studio, he's like, I'm telling you, man, there's something here. I'm telling you.
Love that.
And true story was, you know, he just started managing us. We're in the studio. We just did that song Tuesday night or whatever, and it was that Wednesday, and we called up the label and Loeb, and it's like, you know, we just, you know, guys, we just really want to make sure we're all on the team. We got a place at the label. And he's like, yeah, you know, the guys, you always have a place at the label. And, you know, pretty much like, I can't promise y'all on radio or anything like that. You know how it goes and all that stuff. And then he's like, well, did you hear the song that the guys did with Blanco? He's like, no, I hadn't heard it. He sent it to him. And then.
You know, I love that though about Loba, man. Like he told me that. He's like, I always want them to have a home. If there's any way just them even having a home can help them get work, man. They're too good of guys. They're too talented. They've done too much. And I love everybody hung in there, man. And
yeah, then, I know. It was awesome.
And then he was doing the same thing, by the way. I was working in my office, and I could hear him listening to that damn record over and over and over. And that's when I wandered in there. And I was like, what is this? And he's like, just shut up and listen to it. Don't worry about what it is. And, you know, I'm like, wait a minute. Is that Matt say what the fuck? Because the Blanco thing, you know, was on there. And I was like, wait a minute. What? He's like, John, this is a beast. He's like, that's what I think. You think so? I'm like, dude, yes. Yes. And,
well,
man,
we did a lot of clawing to kind of get everything lined up, but it was, I mean,
well, you took a chance.
Yeah.
You took a chance with Blanco, let's be honest, because, you know, people do have adverse reactions to anything that's new a lot of times.
Oh, yeah.
And there were a lot of doubters about Blanco, and he was very different in his sound. And then, you know, I think in your more traditional country markets, that probably, did you have to do a version without Blanco?
No. Well, I mean, I think people just hadn't heard him sing yet. This is the first time
he
really
can
heard
sing.
Him. Yeah, he sings ass off. This is the first time people really heard him sing and not do like the character voices that he does in a lot of his other songs. So that was one thing that was, you know, nobody really heard it before.
Right. He's such an artist. He's so talented. I love the way that came together. That's a great story, man.
Yeah, man. With curiosity, right? That's all.
Yeah.
Me and him were like,
you could meet this dude.
You could look at it like, you know, screw that guy, man. You know, we should be able to talking to him. He should be talking to us and all that. But we're like, nah.
It would be real easy to have that attitude, though. You know, like, oh, that's the shiny new penny. Everybody's forgotten about Parmalee now. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like a lot of, you know, artists would probably wouldn't have handled it that way.
Well, that's how we got to where we are right now.
You guys are just down to earth, great guys, man. Just crazy fuckers too, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
we're calm.
Especially this one.
We're calm now, man. This is
a calm version.
We're way mellow.
Especially back in the day when I met you, almost 20 years ago. Barry's out of his mind. For anybody that doesn't know,
I meet you 20 years ago.
Can I tell the story about the golf? Well, I'm going to tell it anyway.
Yeah. Oh, you were there for that one.
The golf and guitars event. Barry's MIA, and they got to go on stage. Like, we do this big golf tournament, and I mean, you're golfing and drinking for hours.
Oh, that's a
before you even perform, and no one can find Barry. He's just gone. So it's like, you know, they're gonna have to do the show without him.
I played the golf tournament.
That's how you got in that condition.
Yeah, yeah.
But Barry's passed out in his room, drunk, like on the next level drunk. Which, by the way, you're not the first one to be taken down by that event. I remember one year Drake White fell out of office. We had to give him a stool.
That was the same year.
Was that the same
year? Yes, that was the same year. That was the same year. Yes.
People were wrecked that year. We overdid it that year.
Shout out to Steve.
I think that was the last year that we had shots at every tee box. Because you remember
that's what got me.
In the heat, too. It was hot.
Yep.
So Barry's passed out in his room. And
look, I mean, my defense, I thought we were playing the next day. Yeah. I don't know why I thought that.
About halfway through the first.
Let me tell you why you thought that. Because you needed to fire your manager.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why he's not here and he is. Yeah.
Our record rep, Matty B, went to go wake up Barry. He's like, woke up and said, Barry.
Yeah, I don't know if Matt told you the story, but I get a knock on the door, and I'm passed out, like I'm done, and so Matt got a key and came in there and woke me up. He said, man, you got to go play a show, and I said, I don't think that's a good idea.
Yeah,
And he said, "No, you got to get up." So, but I made it. You know, I don't think I looked all that well, but we played the show, and I didn't screw up anything.
I was shocked. I think I remember it sounding okay because Matt came and told me the story, and I was laughing my ass off. And I was like, "Well, I just saw, you know, Drake back there taking a piss behind the stage in a bush." And
everybody pisses behind the stage in a bush. Yeah,
that's
that
true.
Thing.
That's true. But I actually filmed him doing it and put it on my socials. Yeah. They made me take it down. Yeah. But Matt told me the story, and I was cracking up. And I was like, it just made me love you guys even more. I'm like, hell yeah. Like, that's. But I love that you thought it was the next day.
You got it confused with that first night. That's when the party is, and when we would get there that first night. It's a big old party, too. Yeah.
That's a fun event.
It's great.
You guys still, have you done that?
Yeah, we did it last time they had it.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. I'm much more careful now.
Are you? Good, yeah. Good. Yeah. They give out some good swag. Talking about golf and guitars in Sacramento, by the way, the Morton's Golf Foundation. And
great swag, man.
Morton's Golf. Oh, those swag bags were amazing.
Yep.
Can we talk about the shootout at the OK Corral bus version, man? Because I think this is one of the wildest, hands down, craziest stories I've ever heard, and it's true. And I can't hear it enough because it's pretty damn scary. I mean, there's really not a lot funny about it, but thank God it ended well. But anyway,
I mean, it's a crazy story, definitely. So this will go back to September of 2010, where we had just come out to Nashville and got a production deal kind of going with actually David Fanning and his guys that he was working with.
It was Jason Aldean's
band,
drummer, guitar player, and bass player.
And they had a little I wrote with David and we got a co-write together. And then he's like, "I want to introduce you to the guys."
And we wrote "Must Have Had a Good Time" during that trip.
Well, yeah, we wrote "Must Have Had a Good Time." Anyway, so we got introduced to this crowd out in Nashville, and they were going to take us to this label, Broken Bow Records. That was the end game. We're going to get y'all a record deal, and we're going to record two songs for free, and then we're going to get you guys a record deal. And so this was in May of 2010. So throughout that whole summer, you know, after being in a band for so many years struggling, not having things fall through, up and down. It's like everything. It's about to happen, nothing happens. About to happen, nothing happens. We get out here and get a production deal, and that's going great. So we're playing, just skip to September. We're supposed to come back out here in October to do showcases for Benny Brown and the label. And we're just doing a run of shows during the week, September 20th.
So you're not basically. Even signed yet.
No, we're not signed. We're broke as shit. No, we're not signed. We're working day jobs, logging, cutting trees. And
so you're about to get your break.
Well,
or you're hoping.
We're
you're
hoping
maybe.
For the 10th time before this, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't imagine the crazy stuff.
I can't, and I don't think a lot of people can imagine the stuff you guys go through.
We're talking about writing a book, so we'll get to that. But
you need to, 100%.
Yeah. So we come out here, and we're doing shows to kind of going in the country realm, and so we're doing practice shows, playing wherever we could play during this week.
We're just
week.
Booking everything. I mean, we booked Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, like.
Yeah. And so this was a Monday night, I think. I'm not sure.
I think it was a Monday night.
We booked this little club called the Money in Rock Hill, South Carolina. At the time, we had like a 30-foot RV, like a Hurricane RV, which was no slides or nothing. Basically, it was like a trailer on a go-kart chassis. Yeah, pretty much. It rode like that, you know.
I'm over here calling it a bus.
But yeah, well, it to the people back home, we bought $1 million bus, but it was like 25 grand. So anyway, we're pulling to this little place, and we do our show. I think about 20 people might have showed up. Barry and Josh were in the club packing it up.
Rolling cables.
Scott and I were in the RV out front, and we get a knock on the door to the RV, and I think it's Barry and Josh, obviously, because we just got to RV, like, "Oh, check this out," you know, playing them new songs and just excited, you know, to be on the road, something happening. And so we get a knock on the door, and when I opened the door, there's a gun at my head with a guy saying, "Give me your fucking cash."
There was a gun at your head?
Yeah, he put the gun at my head and kind of stepped into the RV like, you don't, like, there's steps, there's no slide or nothing, it's just a small hallway and a couch, and he's got a gun at my head, and then there's another guy behind him with a bandana on, standing in the door, and they shut the door. And so they.
So went, now they're in there.
They're in there with the door shut.
Where does your mind go in that moment? Is everything black, or is it like does another thing kick in where it's like I better stay real calm right now for a minute?
No, I mean obviously I was like, what the fuck? You know,
that's got to be like a movie scene, scariest feeling in the world because your life could end.
Yeah. Well, it's surreal. You don't think of you just like whoa, and Scott was. I don't know why Scott was in the back of the bus. We had little four bunks made. But he was in the back. I was like, Scott, I need some help. And he's a concealed carrier, and he had his pistol in his bag, and
guy had already fired one into the floor.
He came in. He said, give me your fucking cash, and fired the gun right by my head. I mean, you imagine that, how loud it was in that RV. And that's when everything went into, like, just, you know, adrenaline, panic, everything. And Scott was in the back, and he had to change.
So he heard the gunshot. That's how he knew to get the gun. He didn't know when you said I need help. You could have been talking about anything, right?
I can't remember. That was pretty much he was back there, but it all kind of happened real quick. Give me your fucking cash, and then Scott had to chamber his gun, and he engaged the guy to give him the money.
This is all in a tiny little space.
Yeah, like from me to you, this space right here. There's 8 foot wide. Inside the couch takes up 2.5 feet, and then
so there's a chair there too,
4 feet or whatever. And so
Scott just pops out and bam, or what?
Well, he shoots the guy with the gun three times.
Scott said he was acting like he was getting the wallet, mm-hmm. and then came out and
said, I got him, and then he fired on shot the guy in the back too. And but somehow the guy with the gun fires. Hit Scott three times, and I didn't get shot, and the guy witnessed didn't get shot. And I don't know how they
shot each other three times.
Yeah, and so, I don't know how in the hell. I don't know. I mean, there's no telling how close some bullets got to me or the other guy.
Well, hell yeah.
But so Scott, one of the guys is in the steps. The other guy ran outside, passed out
in the parking lot.
Scott's on the couch, and he said, "They got me." He said. And then luckily we were just so thankful that there was a police officer in a McDonald's right next door.
Oh.
And so, I mean, it all happened just like that, you know, like, and then all of a sudden I saw the door open, Scott's bleeding out. And so they took him out and the other guy, Barry, jumped.
Well, me and Josh were in the club and said, somebody's shooting fireworks out there at your RV. And we're like, no shit. So we walk out there and I'm walking through the parking lot and I see this dude laying down. I was like, man, you got to get up. I thought he was just passed out,
yeah.
You know, drunk or something. And I looked down and saw blood. I said, oh shit, you know, where's the shooter? So I ran to the RV and then that's when I saw the other guy who didn't make it. And then Scott he was like bleeding on the couch and
yeah.
At that point, I think I went into shock. I was like, holy, like, what happened? Because I don't even remember the next few minutes.
Yeah, I just remember the
police being there asking me questions, and I was just like, I don't know, man.
It's a fog, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, so they airlifted him, and he bled out on the way to the hospital.
Twice.
And then they got him. We had to drive, me and Barry and Josh, and this little Ford Ranger, three of us, driving after the show, after everything, cops, everything came up there and was all packed. We had to drive to the airport. In Charlotte, just me, just us three going, what the hell just happened? I don't understand. And then we get to the airport. The other kid, hospital. His parents are sitting in the waiting room.
Yeah, the kid who made it, yeah. His parents were,
and then
it was just us in there.
We roll in there. And then all the doctor says is,
oh, man.
Most people with these injuries have about a 5% chance of living.
5%.
5%. Yep. So it was pins and needles for 30 days. He had to do 3 life-saving surgeries. He had a trach. He was, you know, on a dialysis. I mean, everything down to the last wire on like, if it's got to stay in one more day, he's probably going to have a bag for the rest of his life or be on dialysis. I mean, it was just like
that. What a fighter, and then man.
The worst part was that because he got hit in he got hit one above his heart, one through his stomach, and then one in his butt, which hit his femoral artery. That's what made him bleed out. That was the money shot.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had to hit in order to your body like excretes what I understand lymphatic fluid. So that's what you swell all up, you know. So they had to cut his kick drum leg on both sides like a fish fillet.
Mm-hmm. His calf was
wound vax to suck all that lymphatic fluid out. So he had a big hole right here and 2 slices on his kick and his foot. He had drop foot. He couldn't pick his foot up. And he's a drummer. So,
and that was,
I knew it was bad, but I didn't.
Oh, it was. We didn't tell everybody here how bad it was because we were trying to get that record deal. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you know, so we just.
He was in a coma for 10 days. Mm-hmm. And then there was about 30 more days after that that he was in the hospital.
Yeah. That is unreal. I mean, that, when you told me that story, it blows my mind. That is unreal. Like, that's some crazy scary and terrible shit.
It's way more, like I said, pins and needles, and then I can explain all the shit we went through on a day-to-day basis trying to get him out of there before he, you know, what was it they say? He's always in the hospital and infections and stuff. If he stays in here long, might get an infection and all this MRSA or whatever. That was like, you know, you hear these little things going on.
Yeah, did they think he was
going
to lose his drum leg?
Well, yeah, that was the first thing, you know. I will say this, his nuts will look like the size of a damn grapefruit. We got a picture of that somewhere.
You got a picture of his nuts swelled up like a grapefruit. Of course.
My sister said,
I love that. That's a good way to end and lighten things up a little bit, because it was getting heavy and dark, and like, well, I was getting sad, and then I was maybe I should have brought this up, because this is a lot to have to talk about, but now we're talking about his nuts swelled up like a grapefruit.
But
if he lost his leg, I mean, look, man, if you can have a one-armed drummer in Def Leppard, you could have a one-leg drummer.
Figured it out.
Drummer,
but see, here's the thing. You forget, we didn't have a record deal. We were broke. We didn't have nothing. So our fans and families and everybody got together and raised money and did this help Parma Leaf Fund so we could pay the bills, because they knew we had kind of come out to Nashville and we had something. And so that was September. We finally got him out of the hospital, and he was in rough shape. We did physical training twice a day. We would get him up. Let's go. And I just lived with my uncle.
He had to learn to walk.
Stayed on it. Wow. And then we started practicing. He had braces on his leg. Couldn't hardly do shit. Because we knew we could come out to Nashville and hopefully get a record deal. That was the light at the end of the tunnel. We didn't say, I quit. Screw this. But there's no chance.
Would have been easy to quit, right?
Even Scott didn't. I mean, I remember the day he came out of a coma. I remember it like it was yesterday. We pulled all the shit out of his mouth, because we used to have to take sponges and squeeze water in his mouth while he was in a coma. And they took the trach out, and the first thing he said, "We ain't never playing no more shitty ass clubs."
Yes.
First words.
God bless him for that. Are you serious?
Yeah.
We're swear not to
playing
God,
any more shitty ass clubs.
Yep.
Especially that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I thought you were gonna tell me. We're never playing that club again.
But we went on, you know, we got him healed up as best we could. And then we came out here in that February and we did a showcase for BBR and we sealed the record deal.
Yep.
That is an awesome ending to that.
Yeah.
He still couldn't feel his foot when we did that. He just practiced picking up his leg. So,
matter of fact, Loba was like, we had to help him get on stage, and Loba was like, "Who's this guy think he is, Elvis?"
Loba didn't know?
We didn't tell everybody how bad it was.
No.
We just said, "Well, he got shot. Is he okay? Oh, he's getting better." You know, it was not like, nobody knew how bad
that was. The only question from Nashville was, I remember Tully Kennedy called me. I was still at the hospital, like just a few days after it. He's like, "Do you think y'all are going to be a band again? Do you think you'll be a band?" And I was like, "You damn right."
Mm-hmm. I love that. And so for you artists or you bands out there listening, man, if you think you've been through some struggles, you think you've paid some dues, you think maybe you got a reason to quit, you know, because, you know, you got in an argument with the bass player or whatever, you know, bullshit. You know, these guys have been through it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if that story doesn't inspire you to think, man, maybe you just got to never give up, man.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Thank you for sharing that. That's probably very difficult to talk about. Holy shit.
I've got it kind of condensed down to a sizable story. We talked about it a lot, you know, when it happened. People really want to know. And
such a big part of the story.
It's a huge part of it.
And the journey.
Yeah. You don't want to think about that stuff much. And sometimes when you talk about it, you get these little flashbacks and like, phew.
Yeah,
you know, you're sitting going,
of course, and you know, I'm just tough. If we didn't have the happy ending, obviously,
yeah.
I will say this too.
In the court date, Scott apologized to that kid's mom. He's like, "I'm sorry, this all had to happen like this."
Yeah, that's
so,
awesome.
Like, you
man.
Know, had to kind of get closure and that kind of stuff. But,
yeah,
good for him. Good for him.
Yeah,
so,
man.
Should we eat some insanely hot chicken?
How hot is this?
Okay, so I'm gonna be honest with you.
Okay, listen,
I can do it.
Well, first of all, there's a Nashville Hot, right?
Yeah.
And then there's a Poultrygeist.
I got something to do before I get to the house. I don't know if I'm.
No, I got.
If you don't want to do it, that's fine. I'm going to do it because I always feel like I have to. I will tell you that I couldn't feel my lips for an hour. So I warn you to not get your lips too involved. And I'm going to give you the best advice I can give you. And I didn't figure this out until like the third episode. I figured this out too late. I went and took a piss after eating the.
Oh,
the and didn't wash the sauce off my hands like a complete moron. I was eating the thing and then I wandered in there because usually you wash your hands after you take a piss and not before.
I don't.
In this instance, yeah, you don't.
I wash them before.
Yeah, because you don't want to touch your thing with dirty hands, right?
Yeah, that's
right. Yeah, I always wondered about that. I feel like Yeah, now I feel like my thing might be the cleanest thing I've touched all day, really, because it's behind a couple of layers.
Exactly.
So, yeah, but you put that thing somewhere you wouldn't put your hands sometimes.
That's right. Yeah. Well,
it's funny because it's true.
You got a point. It's funny because it's true. That's exactly right.
All I'm saying is I got a hair appointment here at 5
you
o'clock.
Got a hair
that
appointment.
Would be that'd be the last place you want this stuff to catch up with you, right?
Well, yeah, and let me tell you something. What I was getting at is do not, under any circumstances, touch your thing after touching this, or you're going to feel like you did put it in one of those places.
Mm.
What are you going to do? So you want to just stick with the Nashville hot?
No, I'm going to try it.
Okay, Barry's going in. Matt?
I'll go in.
Yeah. Okay, all right. We're all three going in, and let's...
Let's go for it.
Let me see how clean these bones are when you're done with this. Wait, okay, no one's ever done this. They've only taken a bite, Barry. This guy's going to have... Barry, holy...
Oh, shit.
Look at these bones are clean. Okay, you're an animal, now I'm really worried about you because I forgot to mention I have only taken a bite. I think you might have just hurt yourself.
I think I did.
He said, I think I did. This is going to be bad, Barry. Guess he's going to be passed out in his room again. The poultry guy, dude, you're an animal. I've never seen anyone do that with a mild wing, what you just did. Thanks for that tip. Oh, God, that's hot.
Okay, now it's hitting.
Mm-hmm.
Eat a
you just destroyed an entire wing and had, like...
Try a pickle.
Oh, my God, that is hot.
No, I want to give it a second.
Shit, that's hot.
I want to see what's up.
Oh, shit.
Gentlemen... Thank you so much, man. I appreciate you making the time. Like I said earlier, I know how many people are constantly pulling at you guys for your time. And like I said, man, you know, country artists do the best job of trying to accommodate everybody. And shit, I think you're going straight from here to a gig. Like half the crew's already there, right?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
So you actually literally carved out time out of you know, being off to where you need to be, dude. Thank you so much, guys.
Man. Thank you for having us.
Appreciate you.
Yeah, I'm good. It's good, man. It's good.
Oh, anyway.
I don't see why anybody would purposefully eat that unless they have their senses are burnt out a little bit. I mean, it's good, but it's like...
I've wondered the same thing. People actually would order that. Like, why?
Mm-hmm.
Parmalee, y'all.
Cheers, y'all.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Subscribe.
Damn. Okay.
I hope you got that in there. Yeah.
Did you get it in there? And not do it again.
It was him.
Oh, that was well timed.